Yesterday, Andrea talked about the calming factors, the set of three qualities of mind and of practice that are part of the list called the seven factors of awakening. Those three that have to do with calming, settling ourselves. And today I'm going to talk about the three qualities that are energizing. And these are sometimes taught as being in balance with each other. They work together as in balancing of each other. I think sometimes meditation is often associated with getting calm. But it's possible to get too calm, so calm that you start falling asleep, or dull. And it's important to have the right amount of energy or alertness, or inner strength to go with that calmness. And so these three energizing factors are the balance to the calm, and the calm are the balance to the energizing factors. So the three energizing factors are investigation, effort or energy, and then joy. So together with mindfulness, we have mindfulness, investigation, energy, joy, tranquility, concentration, and equanimity. And one of the reasons why we talk about these factors or emphasize these factors is that it's helpful to begin to recognize them as they occur for us. A big part of what mindfulness is about is recognizing what's happening. And sometimes we have blinders on, or we're very selective in what we look at in our experience. We have particular bias for what we think is important. And so we tend to look in that direction. And one of the biases many people have is to look at the problems, the difficulty, all the ways in which I'm not doing it right, or I'm not up to snuff, or I must be a bad person, or inadequate, or sometimes we bias us towards looking at what's uncomfortable, what's challenging for us. So much so that sometimes the more positive aspects of our life are overlooked. Sometimes we point in that direction. Look, there's these beautiful qualities. And as I said 2 days ago, my hope is that all of you can look back over your lifetime and recognize that the seven factors of awakening have been something that you've experienced at least once. You know, hopefully you've been mindful once. And you say, oh yeah, I can notice what's happening. And hopefully you've looked more closely at what's going on, to kind of study it a little more closely. And hopefully there have been a few times you've asserted some effort. I mean, all of you did to get here. It takes effort to get here, to the retreat. And then all of you, I hope, have had some experience of joy or delight or gladness or some sense of well-being. I hope you've all had some taste of being calm. Maybe for some people it's the rarest of the seven factors, maybe, that and equanimity. But some experience of being calm. And I hope that you've had some experience of concentration, being focused. You know, when I first came to Buddhism, I had an idea that concentration was required some amazing, superhuman capacity to zero in, to focus in. And I would never be able to do it. You know, it's just like you have to be like an astronaut or something, or some Olympian. You know, if it's like required something, you know, more mere mortal like me. I mean, to concentrate it, you know. But it actually doesn't take a lot of concentration, this Buddhist practice. At least for maybe this analogy worked for me. I hope it works for enough of you. But the amount of concentration you really need is the amount that you have when you take the DMV test, the written exam for your driver's license. I mean, I think most people, you know, get to the end of that exam. And they stay focused. I mean, you don't think you wander off and go and get a cup of tea and see what's on TV and start thinking about your high school prom. And you know, you kind of do it, right? So we all have that capacity in certain circumstances. But the challenge is in the retreat, we don't have, you know, the hook of the driver's license to keep us interested. You know, so what we're faced with is ourselves much more, without any hooks, and so it's a little bit harder. But then the mind can kind of the different things the mind is interested in can take over. But we're not asking like for some superhuman thing about getting concentrated. So I hope that some of you have had the experience. In fact, sometimes I think it's just the level of concentration we need for driving a car. There's this concentration there, sustained concentration over time. And then hope you had some experience of equanimity, of having a mind which is non-reactive. Maybe it was back in first grade in the playground and you told someone, sticks and stones don't break my bones. I can break my bones, but words can never hurt me. And so you didn't pick up the words that were being said. And that little nursery thing. It's a lot of equanimity being taught in that. So I think it's really useful to consider, how do I know these things already? As opposed to, you know, I'm supposed to kind of import or create or develop something which I don't have, and, you know, take it from Buddhism and impose it upon my life. I don't think that works so well. I think it's more useful to go from the inside out and say, well, yeah, I know this little bit. Now that I know it, can I develop and grow it? So this emphasis in the seven factors is kind of pointing back, hopefully, to something that occurs from time to time, and by recognizing it and seeing it, both in daily life and on retreat, that those beautiful qualities can grow in us. When I think of Buddhism, you know, I don't think of Buddhism as a religion. I don't think of it as a teaching, per se. I think of Buddhism as being two things. One is that it's an instruction, or one is it's a really important part of it, it's a pointing out. It's a pointing out to a possibility that we all have, potential we all have. It's pointing to something that's right here. It's not pointing to something that's going to be here tomorrow. But at the heart, it's pointing to something that's immediate and something we can experience right here. And it's not rocket science. It's the possibility of relating to what's happening with ease. Relating to what's happening without clutching, contracting, or grabbing, or pushing away. Buddhism is pointing to a possibility of awareness being open, receptive to what's happening. And when we know what's happening, not getting caught by that or pushing it away. And again, rather than thinking that, you know, I'll never do that, I mean, he's talking about, you know, these enlightened beings who spend decades in practicing. But I think all of you have had that experience of having something occurs, and there's some freedom there. There's some ease. There's some lack of suffering in that 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 goes on. I mean, maybe I imagine it happened many times today in small ways. Some of you ended up in this little bottleneck we have at the door here with the shoes, you know, and the wet cement outside, and you know, you have to wait while someone else puts their shoes on before you can put your shoes on. And you have an important place to go, right? So, so how were you with that? Was there some freedom there? Was some, okay, this is happening, I just kind of let it be, and maybe elsewhere I would have been in a hurry and been judging people for something, but like, it's okay, I'll just be here with that. And that then is a moment of freedom. It's a moment of not clinging. It's a moment of ease to just stand there and be patient as the person ahead of you puts on their shoes. And you might overlook that and think that's not important. I mean, that's, you know, we're talking about Buddhism. It's one of the great world religions, you know. We're not talking about waiting for people to put their shoes on. You know, the real practice was here on the cushion. That's where it really counts. I mean, this, you know, the practice is over when I'm waiting for my shoes. No, but I think that counts. And we're pointing to that. We're pointing to that possibility. We're pointing to that possibility over and over and over again in the many details of our life. How do we meet whatever's happening so we can hold it with kindness and openness and without clinging or hate or aversion or without fear? Buddhism in its heart, I think, is pointing to something very simple. So Buddhism is pointing to this possibility of freedom. It's pointing to the possibility of peace. And it's meant to be found here, now. And one way to find it is to assume that it's obvious. It's the peace or the ease you can have in the most obvious way with what's happening right now. You might be sitting here terrified, which happens with people. I mean, we're one of the safest places you can be on the planet. And then people sit there and they get so afraid because finally the fear that they've been carried has a chance to come forth and you see it. So perhaps the peace, the freedom, is not in overcoming the fear, but rather is to not contract around the fear, not to resist the fear, not to get caught up in judgments about the fear, you being afraid, but just to be holding the fear kind of openly in a kind, compassionate way, like this, here, it's like this. And that counts for a lot. There's a freedom there. But I know for me, when I was younger, I would overlook that. I would think, you know, it was that Big Bang piece that, you know, after all, it's a world religion, right? It has to count for a lot. So it has to be this, you know, big, dramatic piece where I get a badge and, you know, recognize as a successful Buddhist. I think it's this practice. One of the things I've learned through a lot of suffering is that this practice is basically has a lot to do with the small details of life. Has a lot to do with humility and humbleness and just bringing mindfulness to what's really obvious. And then can you hold that? Can you try to relate to that in a way that has a little more ease and kindness and freedom? And if you do that regularly, consistently, then it deepens and grows and fills in. I like the idea of filling in. You take this little thing, this little seed that maybe we all have some experience with. It's potential, but then that seed sprouts and grows and develops and fills out to become all of who we are rather than just a small thing. So, in talking about mindfulness the first day, I offered you the word here. Someone in an interview said a beautiful thing I never associated this word with. That if someone is going to, sometimes if someone's going to give you something, and in giving it to you, say, here, like here, take this, like here. And that was a beautiful association to the word here. It was a generosity here. Following in this, the classic list of these seven factors of awakening, following mindfulness is investigation. And for investigation, the great word is what? What? So once you're here, then you can ask what? What is it? What is this? One of the great Vipassana questions is, what is this? Simple thing. What is this? What? And the kind of what is like looking more closely. Like, what really is this? Now that I'm here, I see it. What is this? What is this fear that I have? What is this aversion that I have? What is the impatience? What is this pain? What is this breath? Many years ago, there was a woman who came on retreat and she said, I've come back to retreat because I really want to know where my thoughts begin. Where do my thoughts arise out of? You know, we can go through a whole lifetime and never consider what a thought is or what thinking is about. It's like they say the fish doesn't see the water it swims in. We don't see the thoughts we drown in. So she wanted to come back, she wanted to see, where does it begin? Where does it come from? That curiosity, that interest, what is this? What is this wonderful life of ours? What is it? And so much of, I think, we take our life for granted in the wrong way. We take for granted our anxieties and our hostilities and our neurosis and our, as if they're supposed to be there, our clingings, our attachments. But part of the factor of awakening is to look at, what is this? What is it to be alive? What is it to be a person? What is it to be here now? What is it to think? What is it to feel? What's an emotion? What's a sensation? Beautiful exercise that Andrea gave this morning of all the different elemental sensations of the body. Fascinating way to kind of find out, what is this body? I've never really studied it. I've never really discovered my body, really gone inside. Many people relate to their body from the outside in as if as a concept of their body. But to go from the inside out, what is this? Such a simple thing. What? I think of what as being kind of open, you know, without expectation. For me, I like the idea of what is. You say what, and then you kind of wait a little bit to show, so that the experience can show itself to you. Let it teach you. Let it show what's there. You know, you're supposed to boring in. And some people have the engineering approach to being mindful. Tear it all apart. And let it show you, because your little thinking mind might not really, your biased mind, your mind that's, you know, so selective of what's important, might actually not know what's important. Reality might have a better idea what's important than you do. So if you say what, it allows for something to show itself. What needs to be seen, what needs to come out, come forth. And I wouldn't underestimate the tremendous power of this question, what, or the tremendous power of investigation. I think of it as like, you know, they say that in ecology, that if you introduce a new species to an ecosystem, the whole ecosystem changes, adjusts accordingly. If you bring a new species into your mind, the whole mind changes and adjusts. So this new species here would be investigation, to look more, what is this? And the reason it's so radical, it can be radical, is that often we're caught up in something. We're caught up in our thoughts, our fears, our concerns, our desires, our fantasies, our discursive thinking and thinking about things. And sometimes if we spend a lot of time in the world for thinking, trying to solve our life through thinking, it's kind of like being in a maze that you'll never get out of. And to ask the question what, or to investigate, means that you're not invested in your preoccupations. It means you've stepped away a little bit from your preoccupations to ask the question what. Another image that I like is that of you know, you're at a, I don't know, kind of gathering of a lot of people, maybe they're talking politics or something important, or, and they're kind of arguing and talking and, you know, engaged, maybe even they're Buddhists and they're intensely arguing about the nature of enlightenment. You know, who's right, which enlightenment is the right one, and it's like pretty intense and so invested. And then for some reason, maybe you're bent over arguing and you have a little kink in your back, so you straighten up, stand up straight, everyone else is bending over, you stand up and you stand above them and you look around and you see them engaged fully, but you're no longer in it. You step back in a way, you say, what are they doing? And one of the beautiful things is, if you ever have this experience, if someone else does it at the same time and you look them in the eye and you kind of smile knowingly, like, we're not caught, you know, we're not, but they are. So to kind of pull yourself out, or not be so in the middle of it all, but to step back and kind of get curious, what is this? Changes your relationship. Investigation, it changes where what you're invested in. We invest so much in so many things, and we're changing the where we're invested, and we're invested in investigation, invested in curiosity, invested in allowing us to understand what this experience is more fully. Sometimes that curiosity or interest is really broad. You know, what's going on here in a very wide, big way? Someone also today said today about made the distinction between climate and weather. It's good that you know, we have the Mediterranean climate in parts of California, but within the climate, the weather changes day to day. Some days it rains and it's foggy or different things, but there's a certain kind of climate. So people's life has a climate. It's a pervasive kind of attitude that they're always carrying with them. Sometimes you step back and you see the overall arching attitude of our life. And then we learn how to hold it with kindness and just see it clearly. Sometimes it's a big surprise. Other times, the investigation is, you know, what is this? And the curiosity kind of carries us. Almost like we have a microscope. Particularly, it can be interesting with pain. What is this pain in my knee? Really bring in, and you can really get curious as if you've never known pain ever before, which is probably the case for most people. They certainly have pain, but they have never really looked at it deeply, because we often live in reaction to it. But to kind of let go of the reaction and investigate, what is this experience of pain? And the scientists of pain point out that pain is an amazingly complex phenomenon. There's many, many physical and psychological factors that have to operate together to create the idea of pain. And we have the idea it's a unified thing, the pain. You know, it's like, you know, but it's a lot of things happening there. And so you get interested, what is this thing called pain? And one way interesting is to go really very precise, microscopic attention into the pain, and to see that it's kind of starts breaking up, and it's, you start seeing some of the different elements, the threads that weave together to create the idea of pain. Scientists say that pain is kind of an idea. It's kind of a concept we overlay of, you know, certain ways, intense things come together. And some people find it very interesting to bring that investigation to the details of something. or the details of walking meditation. You know, to really kind of get into the what happens, what goes on in your legs as you step. To get really interested in that. Partly so that that's where you're invested. And that helps. What's the English word? Divest yourself. You're divested. Is that the right word? Divested from all the other places you're invested. And the chances are that most of the places that people have invested their attention, their thinking, has a very poor return. That's probably your track record. If you've been, you know, if you look honestly at how much you've been thinking about certain things through your life, the track record of a good return, you would have fired your broker a long time ago. So to invest your attention into the feet with great precision, so you're really there, begins breaking up the hold that these other investments have, the distractions, the preoccupations. Every time you let go of a preoccupation and come back to your feet, you're in a significant way, maybe a small way, but significant way, beginning to loosen the grip that our preoccupations have on us, or we have on them. So investigation is actually a very powerful thing to do. But then, again, remember, Buddhism is about freedom and peace. So the important thing is to investigate in a manner that is peaceful, in a manner that is not clinging and tightening up and bearing down. Because that would go against the very purpose of what this we're pointing to in Buddhism. So the other is effort. Energy. So, of course, energy is the energizing factor of awakening. And I don't know, you know, what word, single word, might work for you. I feel a little more tentative about offering you this one, so maybe you have to find your own. But a word that I like for energy sometimes is the word this. For me, there's something about just saying this. It's different than here. Here is just like more broad. This is more precise. Like this thing. This is what's happening. This. There's something that's, for me, that's kind of energizing or a releasing of dullness or releasing of tiredness. Just this. So this. This. This is what it is. This. Here, what? Oh, this, this. So energy means to engage, to look more closely, to apply oneself to this, to be willing to enter into this experience now, to be willing to put effort or energy into being mindful or to investigating, put energy into being here. Take some effort to be here, you have to remember to do it. Some effort to investigate what. And here at the retreat, we do it in small ways over and over and over again. We apply effort. Without some kind of effort, there's not going to be any practice. Without some effort, there's not going to be any real transformation. And sometimes it takes a lot of courage. The word for effort is virya, which is cognate comes from the word vira, which means hero. So sometimes it suggests a kind of heroic effort. Which I think it does sometimes. It's not easy. I would never want to suggest that what you're doing here in retreat is easy. Even though we'd like you to be at ease. And one of the reasons, you know, we're working against, you know, a lifetime of conditioning of all kinds that for the most part have encouraged us not to be here and present and mindful in a peaceful way. And so we have to make the effort. But the effort itself needs to be somehow meaningful or peaceful or satisfying. And one of the ways to think about effort is that you're not, again, imposing Buddhism on yourself or making an effort to be someone you're not. I like to think of it that we're really making an effort to wake up to who we are here, to find out and discover who we are, and in that process find our peace and our freedom, but not by saying, oh, this, you shouldn't be this kind of person. You should be different. You're not good enough this way. Let's do this Buddhism thing to make you like a better person, you know, so you're respectable in the world, more lovable or something. I'd rather Buddhism wasn't like this, you know, it's not like reform school. You know. I think at least the Buddhism is, it might not still be so obvious when you first see it, but I see this kind of environment here, retreat, the silence, the respect, this in the schedule and all that, as being one of the, being first a very simple life, one of the simplest lives you can live, but a simple life that optimizes the chance for who you are to be revealed. To ask what, and see what comes forth. See what wants to come forth in you, as opposed to making yourself into something you're not. What wants to come forth? And one of the things I've learned through this practice is a tremendous trust in the power of mindfulness, and the power of just being carefully attentive to what's here. If you bring careful mindfulness to what's here, everything that needs to happen will happen. Don't underestimate the beauty of mindfulness. To give you a little sense of how powerful maybe mindfulness is, I've met many people now in retreat for these practice discussions, talking to people about their practice, and in this capacity of a teacher, I've talked to a lot of people about their suffering. There's a lot of suffering in this world. A lot of people come to retreat for their suffering, and it's part of the reason why we put on these retreats, because people suffer, and it's a place people can come with their suffering and begin finding a different way and find healing or freedom. So people come and talk to me about suffering, and one of the forms of one of the sufferings that at least I've seen that's been some of the most difficult suffering, painful suffering, that those people who were not seen as children. And there's something about not being seen by parents or by other people that is almost the same as not being loved. I think being mindful is a kind of a seeing, is closely akin to loving. To see carefully is almost the same as to love. To see deeply is to love. And to really be willing to see, what is this? See what's here. To let what's here be revealed. Our demons, our joys, our strengths and our weaknesses, to let them be seen. There's something so powerful. Something begins to transform and open and change. So we make the effort, and we keep, you know, doing it over and over again. And a lot of what this virya, this effort, means is persistence, regularity, continuity. The small steps of mindfulness, the small steps of waking up, moment by moment, but just into the next moment, the next moment. And not being discouraged by how often the mind wanders away. Just have the courage to come back to the next moment when you get where you can. Come back. Make the effort to come back. There are times when you might be sleepy tired, and then maybe sit up straight, straighter. You can do standing meditation here in the hall. Those of you who don't know that, you're welcome to stand during one of the middle of the sitting, and just stand to continue your meditation standing. That often can bring some more energy and keep you alert. You can open your eyes. You can do faster walking meditation. It can bring more vitality to the system. Sometimes there's too much energy, too much vitality in the system. And that's where tranquility is helpful to calm, to relax. The word for the tranquility factor of awakening is relax. Relax. And to do that sometimes physically, to look and see where you're not relaxed physically in your body and soften. If there's too much energy going around, then you can soften the shoulders, the belly, the face. So then the third energizing factor is joy. And the word that I associate with joy, the joy factor, is yes. Yes. So you can say yes to what's happening. Yes, this. Yes. To say yes, I think, is a very... comes from a place of inner strength or stability, or comes from a place where you're not so caught in things. You have to be a little bit independent and free in order to say yes to something. You haven't merged. You're not codependent when you say yes. You're here with things. You ask, what is it? This. Connect to it more fully, you're willing to see it and feel it and be with it and experience it more fully. That's the energy part, I feel. You know, feel it more fully. And then a certain kind of yes. Not yes that says, you know, yes, this should be forever, or this is a good thing, or I put my vote in for this. You know, until you're full of fear. Now he says, say yes to the fear. Am I supposed to fear better? No, it's to say, I see you. It's good to be connected. It's good to be a present and see it and be mindful. It's good to be able to say, what is this? It's good to have a practice that can be present for the experience and see it, respectful. At the same time, be a little bit independent of it, not caught by it. It's life happening. There's life happening through me, and it's taking this form now. And it's okay to be mindful. Maybe the yes is not so much yes about what's difficult, but it's yes, I'm here. Yes, I'm present. So I associate the yes to joy. For some people, the joy is the joy of just, it's so good to have a practice. It's so good in a lifetime where many people, in a world, many people never discover a path to healing, transformation, to freedom, to liberation, to compassion. It's so good to have found one. There aren't that many in the world. And, you know, you might not think this is the best one. It's possible what we offer here to be possible in the world. Maybe, who knows, maybe we don't offer the best one around. I think it's better to... We're supposed to be the little vehicle, right? The small one. So it's better to... I think it's, you know, probably better for the world if we just assume that we don't have the best ones. You know, we do the world a service. You know, but it's good enough. And there's not a lot of them anyway. And if you're going across the river... You know, is it better to swim or better to row, or is it better to take a sailboat or better to take the ferry? No. They all get you across. For some reason, you stumbled on this one, the good enough one. it's pretty good. I mean, it's pretty awesome that you should have, that you have found a practice that you can, and the teachings, and someone who talks about this, and that you can actually do it, and just to, I mean, for me, just, I don't really care how far I get in practice. I'm just so happy to have found it and be able to do it. Wow, there is this door, there is this path, there's this something. This is a beautiful thing to have. And it's a beautiful gift to the world to start walking the path, regardless how far you get. And maybe getting very far is not exactly the point. The point is how you take this next step. And as I like to say, some of you have told you, the difference between a beginner and an advanced practitioner is the advanced practitioner knows she's a beginner. The beginner doesn't always know that. You're always beginning again. It's always willing to begin. It's always willing to start fresh and leave it all behind. Maybe you were enlightened in the last retreat. Who cares? That was last retreat. Now is now. Start over. Beginner. It's so good to have this practice. And some people find so much joy in having a practice, having met people. Perhaps you've met some people who you really respect or value their practice, and it's so good to have met people like that and have their examples and know. That's inspiring. Maybe some of you have had tastes here and there in this practice of how good it can be, how good it can be to find peace, to find real safety, to find compassion, kindness. And, you know, maybe you tasted enough that there's the memory of that. Wow, this is great. I'm so happy to have found a path or a way or that I know this. I don't know it right now, but I know this is something. And to feel the joy of that. And then there's a joy of simply walking. I hope that all of you have had some experience of your life of doing something like, maybe it's going for a hike, where the point of the hike was not to get somewhere, but just the joy of the hiking, the walking. Or the reading a novel, a really good novel, the point wasn't to get to the end of the book. The point was to enjoy the novel. Or to do a, you know, go dancing with someone. You know, the best dancer is the one who finishes the dance fastest. Is that the point? Get to the end of the dance as quickly as you can, or play the music. Whoever can play the music fastest wins. You know, that's not the point. The point is to enjoy and have joy in the doing of it. And I find there's a certain joy that happens. Some people by disposition, just the fact that they can do something just brings them joy, just to engage. But there's also joy that happens when we start getting absorbed, when our investment stops being diversified. And sometimes it's good in life to put all your investments in one stock, one area. So we put all of who we are, our intention, our attention, our physical kind of embodied engagement, our emotions. It's all kind of engaged in one thing. We're not fragmented or broken up. Fragmented in having our attention go different places in different directions. And so this is called absorption, to be absorbed in what you're doing. And I hope that you've all had some experience of that in your life in a way that was satisfying or happy. I think sometimes it happens with a really good book or a novel. Maybe it's sometimes, it's, you know, you don't really notice what's going on around you. You just feel so good to be absorbed in it, or a hobby, where you're just completely engaged in the hobby. And even the hobby might require a lot of thinking, but everything, even your thinking is involved in that one activity. Time stops. The world outside disappears. So sometimes when the effort is unified, is collected, when we're kind of really invested in this thing, as this thing is really important, or this is all there is, it's just this breath. We invest everything we have into this breath, this breathing, just be with this breath, nothing else, or this walking, or this eating of your food at a meal, just this, everything is there. Whatever you're investigating or being present for here, this thing, and there's a more continuity with it, then there's this joy that can well up of the joy of absorption, the joy of this complete involvement, the yes to this. Don't go chasing after it, but you might think about, are you diversified? Or are you collected all in one place? And it doesn't really work to get diversified in the Dharma world. To be here thinking about your plans for next year or conversations you had in the past. And we try to invest, really to put our investment into here. Here. When we're here, that allows us to say, what? What is this? Perhaps sometimes with wonder, what is this? And then this, to engage, to get closer, to feel more fully, to experience deeper and in a full way. What is this? Now that I've found out what is here, can I feel it, sense it, experience it, be with it more fully? Not resist it, not hide from it, not try to fix it or manipulate it. Sometimes it's easy to do that. Sometimes it's very hard. Frightening things can happen. Maybe there might be great grief wells up. And this. Let me feel it. Let me make space for it. Retreat like this is an unparalleledly safe and useful place to let what's inside well up and show itself finally. Finally. Some of us have a backlog of things that we've kind of haven't really allowed up. Or it's an unparalleled place to really invest yourself, to collect yourself more fully in this something very simple. To experiment with, what would it be like if I just really collected myself around just breathing, to stay with the breath, stay with the breath. Compose yourself on this experience of breathing. Compose yourself physically on your whole, you're physically, emotionally, mentally, you're kind of composed on it and engaged. Just breathing, simplicity of breathing. Nothing else has to be happen or just be solved or accomplished. It's okay, it's really okay and appropriate and safe to be so simple that all you do is breathe mindfully. So here, what, this, yes, and then tranquility is relax, simple word. Concentration, the word I offer you today is collect. Collect yourself, compose yourself, collect yourself around this, be collected. On the experience here, what's happening. And then for equanimity, I'll offer you the great American mantra. I read a few months ago, this mantra was invented in Boston. And I think, the best records people have, in the 1830s or 1820s. So it's a good place, good beginning. Respectable place to begin, the great American mantra. And from there it spread. It's become one of the great contributions America's made to the world. So the word for equanimity is okay. It's okay. It's okay. Powerful word. We tell it to little 2-year-olds. It's okay. It's okay. Very meaningful. It's okay. 2-year-old, you can't say much else, but it's very meaningful. It captures just the right kind of connotations of I'm here with you, you're safe, nothing has to happen. It's over now, the problems are not here anymore, it's okay. So I offer you those words. The American Seven Factors of Awakening. Here, what, this, yes, relax, collect, and it's okay. So with that, let's take a couple of minutes to do it as we end this talk. You take, put yourself into a, the way you are, into a posture that makes it, that's most suited at this moment for being here. Here, here you are. Here is here. Here. Saying here, and allowing whatever is happening for you to be here as it is. Nothing needs to be any different. It's all okay, just here. Find yourself here. And then what? What's happening here? What shows itself here? What reveals itself to you? If you have no agendas or bias to what's supposed to be happening. Just an open question, what is here? Once you see something that's here, then there's this. Perhaps a slight turning towards to experience more fully, to see more clearly. This. This is here. Perhaps from a place of your strength or the adult in you or the one that's independent, there can be a yes to this. And then as you say yes, to begin gathering yourself around this, to feel it fully, to be collected. Collected or concentrated on this. And then to relax. relax the tension or the contractions, resistance. It's okay to relax. And then offering with the spirit of generosity, perhaps, or compassion, offering the great mantra, it's okay. Thank you.